Attention all you rule breakers, you misfits and troublemakers, all you free spirits and pioneers, all you visionaries and nonconformists. Everything the establishment has told you is wrong with you is actually what's right with you. You see things others don't. You are hardwired to change the world.
You are listening to the Spiritual Activist Radio Show, and I am Rahasia Uncensored, where we look at the world not as it is, but as we know it can be, if and only if we have the courage to question the answers we've been given. This is our world, and it's time for us to take it back. Okay, today we're going to be interviewing Kevin Shipp. He's the author of From the Company of Shadows. And if you want to know more about Kevin, you can visit his website, which is www.fortheloveoffreedom.net. He also has a YouTube channel, and I'm also going to put a bunch of links below this interview for people to follow up, because Kevin, I know you have covered your material. The first time I heard you speak was up in Reading. Dane Wigington invited me up, and it was an eye-opener to just listen to what you had to say and finding out that there's so many secret organizations that's working behind the scenes right here in the United States. But before we get started, something came to my mind that I think is really important. Whether you're Daniel Ellsberg or Julian Assange or Snowden, we always hear their message, but we sometimes forget the personal sacrifice that's involved in doing what you do. And I think that has to be acknowledged from the people that listen to your message, because this isn't something that you wanted to do when you grew up. This is something that you felt compelled to do because of a moral conflict and integrity. And to do that, you've had to give up a lot of security, safety. Who knows what you've given up on a personal level. I'd just like to get your feedback on that. How has this affected you? And was there a catalytic moment that where you looked at yourself and said, enough is enough, I can't do this anymore?
Yeah, Rahasia, I was a dedicated CIA officer, and no such thing as a CIA agent unless the CIA's recruited you. But I was a Category 1 CIA officer, and that was my career and my life until I started seeing, when I got up into the higher levels, kind of the dark side of what the CIA was doing. And I was doing an international investigation, and I came across a vulnerability at any embassy worldwide to our officers out in the field, and where any foreign intelligence service, terrorist, whatever, could hack into the, wasn't really a hack, it was even easier than that, could hack into the system in any embassy and identify our covert officers overseas, which left them open for assassination and other things, including all the assets that they had. So I put together a detailed report, submitted it to senior agency management. It was destroyed three times. I got a call on the secure line threatening me, ordering me to drop the investigation. And then my report was deleted from the CIA headquarters server. That was my first eye-opener. Eventually the CIA was publicly embarrassed, rebuked in a study to the entire intelligence community. And that's kind of where the fun started. I was put on a classified CIA base here in the United States, and it's worth remembering that the CIA, it's illegal for the CIA to conduct any operations inside the U.S., but they're doing a lot of things. So I was placed on that base, and my family became deathly ill. My wife came running into the kitchen one day. Her gums were bleeding. She was bleeding from her nose. She had bruises all over her body. She lost her short-term memory. Her headaches were so bad, they had to put her on morphine. And all the doctors could say was, well, she's been exposed to some kind of toxin. My oldest son, who I just visited last weekend, his immune system was so shot, I secretly flew him out to a well-known immunologist. And after 3 days of blood tests and other tests, the doc sat us down and he said, Mr. Shipp, your son's immune system is so devastated, it's like he's been exposed to a burst of radiation. So there was something poisonous in or under or around the house. I requested that the CIA do an environmental test four times. Four times, They told me they weren't going to do it and to keep my mouth shut about it. The chief of base told me not to communicate with headquarters anymore. And that was my, Ryasha, that was my crowning moment where, you know, you can mess with me, but you don't mess with a person's family. They were deathly ill. It turns out we found a mustard gas shell in the yard, and that base was known for having buried mustard gas there. So after refusal upon refusal, I finally filed suit against the CIA, collected evidence, doctor's diagnosis, environmental tests of parts of the house without them knowing it. And we were followed on the base. I had affidavits from the guards that they were ordered to follow us. Our house was broken into one evening. I documented that in the reports. One of the guards told us that the chief of the facility had ordered them to take that out and destroy it. So they started destroying documents. And that's when I began to see, especially after the initial incident, who and what the CIA really is. And we all know the CIA's got blood on its roots going way, way back. The Mockingbird and the Paperclip and the torture program and on and on and on. So it's dirty from its roots. But I saw firsthand that the CIA would go after one of its officers inside the United States and try to destroy him and his family. That's when I filed suit. They hit me with a gag order, but the CIA claimed the gag order was too sensitive for me to see. So they withheld it for 2 years. That's the power of the CIA and the shadow government. They have that kind of power to basically circumvent the Constitution. So 2 years later, I finally got the gag order, and I have this on some of my lectures, speeches. The gag order was so blacked out when we got it, it was almost funny. I still didn't know what I was gagged from saying. It was entrapment. They were trying to get me to say something that was covered by this blacked out gag order and then come and wrap me up. And they've been trying to do things like that for the last 15 years. So the evidence that I had collected was so strong that a federal district judge ordered the CIA to a legal mediated settlement in Washington, D.C. We went to the settlement. I presented my evidence. And I remember the people around the table, their jaws dropped because it was all documented, including the break-in. So after 4 hours of deliberation, the CIA signed a legal mediated settlement. And I have since released all these documents on fortheloveoffreedom.net so people can see the evidence of all this. So we thought it was over, that the CIA had settled. They promised to give us a letter of apology for what they had done, signed the agreement, and I have that agreement out there now too. 3 days later, the CIA contacted my attorney. This is back in the days of George Tenet and John Brennan. The CIA contacted my attorney and told him, if Mr. Shipp doesn't accept a fraction of the settlement, we're going to invoke the state's secrets privilege and we're going to seal all the evidence of the case. And my response, I said, give this response back to them. No, you signed a legal settlement agreement and I expect you to abide by that. 1 week later, the CIA invoked the little known state's secrets privilege and sealed all my evidence in our case, including from Congress. Our congressman couldn't even get access to it. And then they threatened me with prison if I expose the evidence to anyone under the state secrets privilege. So my son is still very ill to this day. So I thought about that good and hard. Number one, about the Constitution and what freedoms we have left. And number two, about what they did to my family. And that's when I made the decision to come out and expose everything that they did. I came out and violated the state secrets privilege, put all my evidence out in the book and out in the public domain. Then I waited for about 5 years to be arrested. Essentially, my wife and I waited for the black Suburbans to roll up. We lived like that for 5 years. And that's when the statute of limitation runs out. And I was prepared to go to prison. Don't even pack your bags because you're not going to take anything anyway. Every single night, I was ready to go. And if they did that, we were going to make that arrest public. Well, they never did because they knew they'd committed criminal acts. They knew that the things they blacked out in my book were illegal to black out. And by the way, I put a code in the book that they missed exposing the blackouts because they were illegal. So for the last 15 years, I've been bugged, harassed. I've got an assassination threat out there on a videotape. Our phones both have been bugged. That was verified by a CEO of the company that does it. And on and on and on it goes. But I continue to stick to my decision, and I will for the rest of my days.
Well, we're probably being listened to right now. So I think I hear people talking about You know, like if I try to tell them some of the things you've said and other people have said, they say, our government wouldn't do this. I think we're making a mistake when we say our government. I really think our government slipped away from us. Actually, the moment that bullet went into Kennedy's head, I think that was the one of the pivotal moments. But getting your message out there as much as possible, I'm really proud to be part of helping you do this, because I think that was Seth Rich's problem. He wasn't well known enough when he put out all of this information to WikiLeaks. If he was better well known, like Alex Jones and David Icke and people like this, that sort, and this brings me up a point. Alex Jones, I only believe some of the stuff that Alex Jones talks about. I look at him as more entertainment and craziness, but he has a right to talk about what he's talking about. And the powers that be, if you stop and think about this, they've not only proven everything that he was trying to say, they've proven his conspiracy theory massively, which I think is going to fold back on him. But they've also stepped into the realm of taking editorial responsibility. And they're not going to be able to edit every single person on Facebook and YouTube and all of these platforms. They've put themselves in a precarious situation, like newspapers. If the Washington Post, if one of their journalists says something detrimental or defamation of character, you can sue them, because they have editorial responsibility. And YouTube used to not have that. But by taking this step with Alex Jones, they're starting to get into that realm. What do you think about that?
Yeah. I get kind of disconcerted when Alex goes off on some of his rants, and that's kind of sad. He has some great guests on there, a couple of whom I know personally. But what the social media doesn't understand is they have poked the bear. And by the bear, I mean the millions of U.S. citizens out there that are tired of their own government surveilling them, especially since 9/11. What most people don't realize, the NSA was bugging our phones and computers before 9/11 happened. So they can't use 9/11 as an excuse. They just ramped it up after that happened. When I came out, I had a rude awakening. I finally decided, okay, we're going to make this public, because being public is the only thing that keeps me alive. Yeah. So I called the Washington Post. I said, look, this is the story. This is what I'm coming out. And for 30 days, the Washington Post stalled. And I found out they went straight to the CIA and reported my story and what I had told them to the CIA. I called the Washington Post a mockingbird paper. And as we know now, Amazon, Jeff Bezos, has bought the Washington Post, and now he just entered into a $600 million contract with the CIA. This is so heartbreaking for those of us that love this country, because we are living under a post-constitutional government. And the saddest part of all is we don't have to be afraid of a foreign power bugging us. Our own government is doing it. And for those of us that love this country, that's a hard mental threshold to cross, that our government would do this to its own people to the extreme. And that's the most heartbreaking part of all of this.
Yep. You know what? And you're doing it too, because we are so identified with our government. You and I'm 70 years old. I grew up during, well, the American dream, that you basically had to be asleep to believe. But I really grew up loving this country. And I still like to call it my country, my government. But I really think that it has slipped away from us to international bankers, international corporations that have no sovereign attachment to this land at all. They're more into the global environment and taking us into this global arena. You know, I know when I was talking to our mutual friend, Dane Wigington, he was telling me about the fires and how the fires in California almost directly match some of the maps from Agenda 21 that comes from the United Nations. They want this whole area to be a no living zone. And what better way to do that than to burn us out, drive the property prices down, ruin the farming? They're spraying us with aluminum oxide. I was just recently tested. I'm really high in aluminum oxide. And this is something that
Oh, goodness.
you might be interested in too. What I'm doing is I'm doing a cleanse, getting the heavy metals out, but I discovered stem cells. I'm telling you, if you know anybody that's a little bit sick, like anybody in your family, I know of a place in Mexico that's really doing a really good job for $900. They're pretty close to the border. I know my wife's going to go down there next week and get her first stem cell treatment. It's an amazing thing. And it's just one more aspect of what's going on in this country that you can't do. Where everybody else, they're doing it all over the place. Stem cell treatments are really popular in a lot of countries now, and people are going there to get them, you know. But again, I don't think this is our country anymore. It has slipped away, but there is an underlying unrest, a sort of bubbling up of conscious people like yourself, me, and all of this independent media that for now we still have this platform, but they're going to try to shut us down because they know they have to.
Yep.
But there's something happening at the deeper levels in the halls of justice, in the halls of the Pentagon, whether it's the Oath Keepers or there's groups of people within the government that knows what you're saying is true and something has to be done. And they're trying to figure out a voice and ways to come about. Can you address that?
Yes, there's a lot of patriots within the government. There's some people in the CIA that I call it the paranoia palace. They're upset about all this, but they can't say a word or they lose their job or they go to jail because they signed a secrecy oath. But there's people in there, and especially in the military, that see this going on. Some people call them the white hats. They're in there, and they're kind of bound by what they can say. But I can tell you, if this gets any worse, some of those people are going to act in terms of coming out publicly. There is a revolution brewing amongst the patriots, amongst the alternative media. I get hundreds of tweets and Facebook posts every single day from people saying, we're tired, we're fed up with this, it's got to stop. So as I mentioned earlier, they have poked the bear, and the bear are conservative, meaning patriotic, constitutional loving people that believe at least in the freedom this country was built on, and they're upset that we don't have it now. So these American patriots are out there by the millions, and they've been poked, and there's a bubbling revolution going on. All it takes is a spark, and people are going to start moving. Sadly, our government is working against us through the global big pharma that's controlling our lives through drugs. They've got a hold of the mainstream media. It's gotten so ridiculous. You can't watch CNN without somebody lying or twisting the truth. And I used to watch that when I traveled all the time. It's reached a boiling point how bad the mainstream media is. And this is all tied into globalism. All of it, including what the CIA is doing, including what the corporations are doing. And you know as well as I do, Rahasha, that the Federal Reserve is neither federal nor is it a reserve. It's not an agency of the federal government. It's private banks, and there is no reserves there. And everything they do is in secret. Now, when the government does something in secret domestically, you know what they're doing is unconstitutional. And the Federal Reserve is staffed by a secret board of international bankers, not U.S. bankers, international bankers, and they set our monetary policy inside this country and their foreign banks. I mean, since 1913 and maybe a little bit before, we lost our Constitution, and it's begun sadly eroding ever since.
Yeah, you know, a really good book for you and the listeners on this subject of the Federal Reserve is You Know Something's Wrong When. This book lays it out perfectly, what happened all the way back to the early 19th century, how it was contrived in secret, completely illegally. It's a completely illegal institution. Even our Congress says that only Congress has the right to print money. And all of this stuff is coming out into the public domain. I know people say, well, what's changed? I think what's changed is we've been playing chess with the government, and the government always wins. And we're going, oh, God, I guess I'm just a bad chess player. But now with cell phones and independent media and people videoing the game,
right,
they're going, no, wait, when you're not looking, he's moving his pieces. And now the government is like being controlled so much by all of this circumspect visualization of our country that they're reaching that moment where they're just going to go, fuck you, and throw the board up. And that is what I'm afraid is called World War III. And I can see that, like, the preliminary happenings to any world war are trade wars first, because the powers right. that be love to make money. As long as they can make money, they're fine. If we're not making money and they're making all the money, they're fine. But the moment that starts breaking down, the first step is to do trade wars. And that's how the war starts. If that doesn't work, then they escalated up to a full-on, in this case, it would be World War III. And do you think that's where we're headed if we're not careful?
Well, the military-industrial complex, which is real. As a matter of fact, Eisenhower originally called it the military-industrial congressional complex, because Congress is tied in so deeply with the donors and contributions to their PACs and lobbyists and on and on and on. The military-industrial complex needs war to survive, and its CEOs are making an average of $27.1 million a year. These people are so above the average American, it's ridiculous. But so the complex has got to have war to make its money, and that's why, in my opinion, especially, we're seeing the military-industrial complex, we're seeing the news media, we're seeing some of the, I call them the dark members of the news media. They're pushing hard for war with Russia. And that's absolute foolishness, but you can see it everywhere. They want war with Russia, and they try to do it through Syria because that's where they make their millions of dollars, through guns, war, weapons, and other covert government programs. And if that dries up, then their salaries dry up, and on and on and on it goes. So our country is bound by that, bound by these corporations, bound by the congressmen and senators that are tied into these corporations by money. And I one of my speeches, I did some research. The 48 members of the Armed Services Committee, John McCain was the chairman of that. All 48 receive $700,000 a year in contributions to their reelections and PACs from the military-industrial complex. They're bought and they're paid for. So that's true. They are trying to push us to war because that's how they survive and become millionaires.
You know, it might be a mistake for the United States to actually go to war with somebody that can fight back. Most of the people that we've gone to war with have been, well, if you stop and think about it, almost all the people that we've gone to war with recently are the people, the countries that aren't part of our Federal Reserve fiat money system. They're pushing back against that. You know, that's probably not a coincidence, mm-hmm. for one. But if we go to war with China or Russia, I think they're going to fight back. And that could be one of the biggest mistakes this planet has ever made, because three or four atomic bombs around the equator would give us a nuclear winter that we would have a hard time surviving. Very difficult, matter of fact, because the atomic bombs now, they make the ones in Nagasaki and Hiroshima pale in comparison. I mean, it's like you can't even wrap your head around the kind of explosions that they could cause. Not to mention the fact if they put one up in the stratosphere, blew it, and knocked out all of our electronics. I mean, everything, this, our electric, water, everything is dependent on computers and electronics. So we can't survive. Matter of fact, I wrote a book, To Believe or Not to Believe. It was about the social and the neurological consequences of belief systems. One thing that came up is once a person has a paradigm, a set of beliefs, it is so difficult to get them out of that. Because most people set out to not find the truth, but to keep on reinforcing whatever they believed in before.
That's right.
And
that's absolutely right.
Yeah, this is where we're at right now. We have a lot of people that have set out on this path of America is right, America is the best country, America is just. And anything that interferes with that is unsettling for them. And, you know, what you have to say is really unsettling to a person that's trying to sleep and dream the dream. So my hat is off to you, because this is a tough road to be on. But little by little, you know, we've touched on this before, people are starting to wake up a little bit. And as they wake up, they're going to wake up other people. And I think some of the mistakes that this country is making, like kicking Alex Jones off of every platform from multiple platforms within a matter of a few days, is a pretty much a sign that, hey, these people are out to get anybody that's talking against the establishment right now. And now with the fires that are going on in California, burning over 2,000 degrees, I mean, it's getting so hot that it's melting glass and metal. These fires don't burn this way in a forest fire. These fires burn this way because there's something else going on. So it's starting to wake people up, because it's hitting close to home. They're seeing their 401ks disappear, and criminals. I mean, what's the saying? When it's a crime to commit, or when it's a crime to report a crime, you know you're being ruled by criminals. You know, you probably know this much better than I do. You know, we're at that point now where it's getting more uncomfortable to stay asleep than it is to wake up and deal with the reality at hand.
You are so right, Rahasha. It's a mental paradigm that a lot of people cannot cross over. Because when you believe your government is still constitutional, then you feel safe and secure, and you can go about your business of just trying to survive. But when someone comes and rocks that boat, you have to make a decision whether you want to give up your paradigm of safety and start standing up for your constitution and your country. A good example of that is 9/11. You just mentioned the fact that there are some really strange things about 9/11. And I've had friends that said, oh, man, don't give me that stuff. That's a conspiracy theory. I don't want to hear it. And they put their fingers in their ears. Was that most of us know, I've gone through the 9/11 Commission report. There's 60 major errors in there. We all know that Tower 7 free fell in its own footprint, and it wasn't hit by a plane. You could go on and on with facts. Structural engineers have told me it was not possible for the buildings to come down like that from a plane strike. They're designed against it. But my point is, people cannot cross that paradigm, because if you do, I gave this speech I was teaching at a university, criminal justice, and I gave this lecture on 9/11, and when we were done, everybody was speechless, including me. It hit everybody that our government was lying to us. Yeah. We know that 29 pages were blacked out. It was Saudi Arabia's connection, and on and on and on. If you do a reverse criminal investigation, and an investigation was never done, if you do a reverse criminal investigation of 9/11, you see a whole different picture. And intentionally, they did not do a criminal investigation. As a matter of fact, they shipped out all of the steel, the chief focus of an investigation, shipped it to China, and China melted it down. So all the evidence was destroyed. My point is, people, they have to take a non-emotional, at least intellectual step aside and tell themselves, let me just look at the evidence. And of course, when they do, they're going to have to cross over from that desire for safety into the fact that we're in a post-constitutional government.
Yeah, I think one of the most probably insane, unbelievable conspiracy theories that you could ever come up with would be what the government told us happened on 9/11. You know, it's so bizarre that I can't even see how people could believe it in the first place. But what they did at 9/11, it'd be like if there was a murder in a house down the street, the government rushing in, stealing the body, burning it up, and bulldozing the house. I mean, it's a crime scene. That's not how you do it. Yeah. You get forensics involved, and it should be transparent. But they completely wiped out all of the evidence and shipped it off. And I'm telling you that I don't see how people can't see this sometimes, to be honest with you. It's just that
I agree. I
think they're being entertained to death. There's a large percentage, about 15 to 18% of the people are on pharmaceutical drugs now. which isn't an accident. This is to keep them really subdued. And I don't know if you've ever had too much to do with drugs, but if you take drugs over a series of days, let alone months or years, you're not seeing reality as you should be seeing it. And I see so many people out driving. I used to ride motorcycles all the time. I won't do it anymore because it's too dangerous out there. People are just riding around like crazy. They're not paying attention. And you can see it in their eyes. They're out there. They're not really, really here. They're in their mind thinking about other stuff. And then they go home and watch the Kardashians and crazy stuff on TV. And it just keeps them completely detached from reality. And
right.
And I think a lot of us, we forget, we don't want to admit this maybe, but we forget that the powers that be, they're much smarter than we are. They get up early, they sit around a $100,000 mahogany table, and they plot and they scheme to do everything from depopulation on just to make money and keep the bottom line going. And for you and I to sit here as two human beings thinking, is that even possible? That people, I mean, we're all human beings. How could they do this? You know, just to make money that they can actually print up. But then that gets into the other realm of, it's not really about the money. They have the printing press. What they want is complete control. And if they can have complete control, then they can guide the way they want everything to go. And I really do think that depopulation is part of their plans. They know they have to get this population down to a controllable size, which, being the devil's advocate, I agree with. We have to. The population is going crazy. Resources aren't abundant. We've created a financial system that depends on infinite growth, that is totally dependent on consumerism, which is totally dependent on a finite resources. Those two schemes of things are colliding right now, and it's going to bring everything to a screeching halt. And if I know this, I know they've seen this years ago, and they're working on some way to bring the population down. And this is where conscious people could step in and go, hey, let's start doing this ahead of time. Like, if I was in a position of power and a person was on social services, well, God bless them. You know, they need help. But if they're out there having baby after baby after baby, something has to be done. And I agree with Trump. We have to do something about immigration. I mean, look at France and Italy and now Sweden. These countries are imploding, and if we say if we say anything, it's totally different. If a white Anglo-Saxon person says something, we're put in this kind of weird racist kind of a box, you know, where if you're any other race, it seems like you can say anything you want to, and it's perfectly okay. But we need to wake up. We need to get the population under control, and I can't think of how to do it because religions, I mean, still the Catholic Church in sub-Saharan Africa, where AIDS is running rampant, they tell the men, married men, that they still can't wear a condom, even if they have AIDS. I mean, this is insanity. If this was happening not in a global level or national levels, and you just took it down to a personal level, you would think, oh my God, that person is totally insane. They need help.
Yeah, well, and we've seen that evidence has now come out that the Pope was actually covering up these gross sex abuse cases with altar boys and minors. And I hope people don't make the mistake and equate Roman Catholicism with Christianity, because they're two different things. So you've got religions, like you're saying, out there that go by these rules and regulations that are actually hurting the population and other things. And I think people need to be aware of that. But it is so true. Something has to be done. The population is out of control. But there are smart ways to do it. People are smart. They can come up with ways to do it. And what the big question is, why is there possibly people, wealthy people, that would do this sort of thing in terms of population control, globalism, and everything else. But yes, if you've got a very, very wealthy person dedicated to globalism, which they are, they're narcissists largely, but they have no moral center whatsoever. So you take an intelligent person with no moral center, nothing outside of themselves, that are very, very brilliant, they're going to do, thinking that they're intellectually above everyone else, they're going to do these heinous things because they have nothing to hold them back, and that's what we're seeing.
Yeah, you know, I have a friend, Bruce Lipton. He wrote a book called Biology of Belief, and I was talking to him one time about this very subject, and he says, there's something that people really need to wrap their head around. Like, for you and I, we have limitations on what we could do to other people because we have compassion and empathy. There's things that would make it just not feel right. But he said that genetically, there's about 6% of the population that are actually sociopaths, psychopaths. They actually lack the ability to, they can mirror it really good. They can appear like, they can cry and have, you know, the appearance of really being sympathetic and compassionate, but they don't have the feeling. And this is what gives them the edge on people like us. They can do things to us that we cannot do to them.
And that's exactly right.
I talk to I have a lot of spiritual friends, and I tell them, you know, the reason I am becoming more and more spiritual and loving is because I think that that's the only way out of this. Without a conscious evolution of our mind and opening up to the higher realms of solutions, like Einstein said, that we're never going to come up with the solutions from the same level that created the problems. Well, it doesn't take a genius to figure that out anymore. Right now, everything that we do from this lower level, it entangles us more. We can't go up against them in a full-on revolution. We have rifles, they have tanks. We're not going to win this game at their level. We have to evolve higher, and this takes meditation. It takes paying attention to our health, our minds, and really hoping, and I hate to use that word hope, it's like a beggar's kind of word for me, but we have to hope that we're getting into a conscious realm where we're going to get higher feedback from a higher mind, a higher global consciousness. And I can see this happening on this realm, like this latest thing with Monsanto. That's a chink in their armor. That's a crack in the dam. The science is available now. Now it's only a matter of time, and the cereal companies will start, you know, they're starting to get a little bit restless because they've known about this a long time. But they know the lawsuits are coming, and this is how we bring them down, with lawsuits. So how do you feel about that? Do you think consciousness is going to play an intricate role in this?
Absolutely. If you believe in a higher power, and I do, I've traveled all over the world, done a lot of study on this, there is a higher power. And the only way a person, in my particular case, what has gotten me through is my faith. That's the one strength that's kind of the foundation of me standing. So there is a higher power. And when somebody believes in that, it motivates them to have a moral center and a conscience and want to help other people and stand up against these big entities that are injuring people, like the monster Monsanto. So without a doubt, belief in a higher power changes everything for people. Changes their center, their way of life, how they think, changes their morals. They get more concerned about humanity than themselves. And there's no question about that.
You know, I really like this interview because this interview is exactly what I wanted it to be. It's more like a conversation between two guys that really care about life, care about the country and other people. And that's an important aspect. I'm going to ask you one more thing. Then after that, I want you to talk about what is really important right now that's going on, any updated information, Hillary, whatever you want to talk about. But I'd like to get your feedback on QAnon. What do you think about QAnon?
Well, the Anons are wonderful, patriotic people. There's no question about that. They filmed one of the speeches I did. We went out and had dinner afterwards. Wonderful people. As far as Q goes, I'm on the fence, and maybe I'm naturally suspicious because of my counterintelligence background. What I'm concerned about with Q says a lot of things that people want to hear, and that's fine. But I would say that the jury is still out on that, and I'm on the fence. I'm willing to go either way. But people just need to be concerned, and I'm not saying this is the case with Q, but generally, when the government does a psychological operation, what they will do is they'll put information out there that people really want to hear, and once they got millions of people on board, then they'll throw a fly in the ointment, some crazy thing that makes everybody in the movement look like conspiracy theorists are bad. That's a government psyop. So I just think people need to be careful. They need to continue to analyze Q and everything that Q puts out. So some of the things he's put out have been right on. Some of the things have not. I think Q is more a they than a he. I think it's a group of people. I'm pretty certain of that. So just people need to be cautious. And just as always, they got to examine and analyze everything.
Yeah, I agree. There's something. If I was on the other side of the fence, QAnon would be one of the things I'd think about doing. Because one way to keep people asleep is throw them a bone and keep them it's just going to happen. It's just going to happen. It's just going to happen. And it keeps people right on the edge. And then the first thing you know, they implode the whole thing. Then everybody gets confused, depressed, you know, oh no, it's just another, I've been sucked in again. And this, you know more about disinformation than I do. The best way to put out disinformation is give them the truth and give them the lie, both at the same time. Because of cognitive dissonance, we can't hang on to both of those things in our mind at the same time. And if you keep doing it back and forth and back and forth, eventually, I mean, how many people have you met that says, I can't think of this anymore, I can't deal with it, because they have been knocked back and forth, not knowing they're part of a psyops operation to do that very thing.
Yep.
Tell me what you found out recently that's been happening. What's the most recent thing that you've been finding out?
Well, it's shocking, and it's kind of, you know, I think I'm going to get a bumper sticker that says I was talking about the deep state when talking about the deep state wasn't cool. When I first came out, it was a lonely experience. But now it's out there all over the place. I guess now that it's safe, people are talking about the deep state and the shadow government. But we have seen, and I think it's fantastic, the deep state shadow government come out into full view with this corruption, with the FBI writing the false dossier, which is a pack of lies, British MI6 and GCHQ working with our own NSA to spy on American citizens, the National Security Advisor Susan Rice and Samantha Powers, the UN ambassador for the U.S., they unmasked over 300 names of American citizens from NSA surveillance and completely got away with it. Because of the power of secrecy and the walls that they have around them, they were actually spying on the American people. We know that the FBI and CIA had spies within the Trump campaign. This is a president, whatever you think of Donald Trump, this is a presidential campaign. And they put CIA, FBI spies inside the campaign, not to mention the NSA unmasked surveillance. And so we are seeing in full view now, including John Brennan, who was kind of at the center of this whole thing. We are seeing the shadow government come out in full view to the point where most people can't ignore it any longer. And it's going to get worse and it's going to get uglier because the shadow government does not want to give up its power. It continues to wield the power of secrecy, which I write about in my book. That is the greatest power they have, to be able to make things secret and no one can say a thing about it. So that's what we're seeing now is the gross, I call it in my book, the tyranny of secrecy. We are seeing these people use secrecy as tyrants to block information from we the people, to cover up their illegal activity. And when Congress does demand a document, like the FBI is doing now, they refuse to turn it over to Congress, our representatives. So that's what we're seeing. We're seeing the shadow government and the deep state, which is more the military-industrial complex. We're seeing them gasp and grab onto power, and they're just getting nastier and nastier and nastier. And it's up to we the people to question when something is blacked out or redacted that the government feeds Congress. Every single American needs to question why that's been blacked out, because our government works for us, not the other way around. And if they're going to black something out, they better darn well be able to justify that it was correct in doing so, because they're abusing that grossly.
Yeah, I think one of the things that's happened was Trump. And it's funny because he is the Trump card. I have friends that says, well, he's an idiot. He's a narcissistic idiot. But I say, you know what? He's our narcissistic idiot. He is the monkey wrench that the powers that be, they've thrown it into the works, and it's doing exactly what it's supposed to do. Crazy or not crazy, he's exposing things. And if you stop and think about it, it would take a narcissistic person to get that entrenched and stand up to these truly narcissistic, pathological sociopaths. I mean, Bernie Sanders, God bless his soul, I think he's a nice guy, but they would have eaten him alive if he was president. He would have got in there and he wouldn't have been able to stand up to him. Hillary, if she would have got in there, everything would have went as normal, and we would have got deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper into this mess and probably never got out. I mean, I thank goodness she didn't get president. Yeah, that would be the end of everything. What do you think about Hillary?
That would have been her, if she was elected president, that would be the final nail in the coffin of our Constitution. The amazing thing is these corrupt officials in the FBI, James Comey and others, and John Brennan in the CIA and on, Peter Strzok and others, they're all connected to Hillary Clinton. They all are connected to trying to get her elected president and destroy Donald Trump. That is the kind of power that I call it the Clinton crime syndicate. That's the kind of power this woman has, or had, or still has, over our own government. If she would have gotten elected, God forbid, that's it. She is criminal. We all know that she should be prosecuted for violation of Title 18 espionage laws, obstruction of justice, destroying subpoenaed emails, smashing the BlackBerries, on and on and on and on. She should be in jail. If anybody at a lower level did that, they'd be looking at 20 years. And yet, the shadow government protected her. Senior officials protected her. And now I think most of them are running scared because what they did is criminal. So she runs an international crime syndicate. And I'll give you one quick example. Uranium One. We all know about that. The Clintons sold it was 20% of our uranium to Russia. But that's not the whole story. And they claim that it never left the U.S. Well, it did. It went to Asia. We don't know exactly where in Asia, but it went to Asia. And amazingly enough, WikiLeaks, and I think they ought to pardon Julian Assange, in my opinion, WikiLeaks leaked a document that showed that Robert Mueller was acting as a courier to take samples of uranium to Moscow. And now we know that rich representatives of the Russian government contributed $145 million to Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign as part of the swip swap with the Uranium One deal. So they sold the uranium. Robert Mueller was right in there. He's one of the people that approved it. Hillary Clinton got $145 million from a foreign power into her campaign. And this is the smarts behind this. By doing that, by getting money from a foreign power and placing it in foreign banks, that cannot be subpoenaed by Congress, because it's in a foreign bank. It also cannot be released through Freedom of Information Act because it's outside the United States. So she did an international foreign political action campaign to the tune of $145 million to try to become president of the United States. That's the Clinton crime syndicate. That's how deep, globally intertwined, and I can't think of a better word than evil, that they are. They are a clear and present danger to our Constitution and to our freedoms.
Yeah, and this is without even bringing up Epstein Island and the Lolita Express and all of the debased botchery that's been going on with these people. So, you know, Kevin, I could talk to you for hours, but we have about 7 minutes because this is a 55-minute radio program. There's something that I need to ask you, and I feel a little bit guilty about asking you this because the very subject can invalidate so much of your message. But what do you think about the extraterrestrial aspect of what's going on with this planet, the government, UFOs and CIA's involvement? Because out of those 12 million papers, there's a few hundred papers that says the CIA absolutely knew that something was going on. There's so much redaction going on, it's hard to say what was what. But what do you feel about that?
Well, I think it's fascinating, very fascinating. I can tell you when in my years in the CIA, and I worked in operations and investigations and other things, I didn't see anything like that at all. But you got to remember how compartmented the CIA is. It is like I liken it to like a castle, and the upper levels of the castle, you have to sign a secrecy, essentially a blood oath, to get into that room. And then to get into the inner rooms, you have to sign another secrecy oath to see the inner rooms. Most of CIA dark operations are only known to a handful of senior officials. So I never saw anything like that when I was in there. So I try to stick to my lane of expertise because I just don't have any expertise on that. But that doesn't mean it hasn't been happening. I'll give you a final example. I was on an agent on the director of CIA's detail, William Casey, during Iran-Contra. And we were right next to him all the time, 24/7. And yet none of us knew that Bill Casey was working with the Saudi government to target an imam overseas with an IED. And so the CIA had the whole program set up. Turns out they had the wrong guy. It wasn't that imam. They detonated the explosive and killed 64 women and children at a girls' school. And none of us knew he was doing that. So that just gives you an idea of how they use compartmentalization to keep these things from the American people. Just to answer your question, just because I didn't see it doesn't mean it's not there.
Yeah, and actually this is a good thing to bring up, and I think it's really important too, is it seems like the low-level CIA agents and analysts and the FBI, they're actually good people. They're out there at least under the impression that they're doing a good thing, and they get involved in this.
Yeah.
At that level, thinking that they're really important, they're really doing the right thing, and it's little by little that people like you find out what's going on at the higher levels. And I think it's important to acknowledge that, because a lot of CIA agents that would be listening to this, they might be thinking we're talking about the whole CIA conglomeration, and we're not. We're talking about the high levels of the administrative levels that they're not even CIA. There's something else entirely. They're globalists. They're people that walk in and out of revolving doors with government situations and corporations, and they're making millions and millions of dollars. And you probably realize that low-level CIA agents, they don't make a lot of money. And they're really compartmentalized in these little cells to where they don't really know what's going on. And I'd like to acknowledge that, because I have a lot of friends that are in the military or police department. They're really good people, but they don't know what's going on. You know, they do not know what's going on. I was going to do an interview with the police chief here a few years back, and right at the last moment, he canceled. And I said, "Why did you cancel?" And he says, "Well, meet me for coffee." So I went down to Chico, met him for coffee. And so I said, Why did you cancel?" He says, "Well, for one thing, I'm quitting. I can't be a police chief anymore." I said, "How come?" He says, "One word, militarization." He says, I see the writing on the wall. This is not what I signed up for." And I think as all of us start recognizing what's going on, we need to unplug, stop supporting the system. I can't believe mothers still send their sons to war to fight these crazy business wars. I mean, seems like we would have learned years ago. So how would you like to end this? You want to say anything in particular about any upcoming events that you're going to be doing?
Well, I always like to stress that welcome to the revolution. There's millions of us out there that love our Constitution, not as some sort of thing to worship, but as the greatest governmental document ever written, making the freest country that's ever been established, at least a few decades ago. So I want people to understand that there are millions of people out there that feel and think exactly the same way that you and I do, and they're getting active. Donald Trump is Donald Trump is the way he is because he is the only person that could stand against the shadow government. And anybody that thinks he's a part of the shadow government, just look at how they're trying to destroy him. That answers that question. So just I want everybody to be encouraged that there are millions. There's a movement. There's a peaceful civil revolution that's starting amongst millions of people. We're all out there, and they'll come out of the woodworks when there's the right flashpoint and start getting active. And many of them are active right now.
Yeah, and once again, Kevin, your book is From the Company of Shadows, and your website is fortheloveoffreedom.net. And I really encourage people to go there because you've recently posted some papers about Hillary that are pretty revealing. I don't think you're going to be invited to any of their parties any time in the near future.
Yeah, you know.
So I know you have a lot to do, Kevin, and I just want to thank you for your time. And anytime you feel inclined to sit down and just talk like this, I'm always available for you. And I'll tell Dane that you said hello. And
please do.
Yeah, I will. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rahasha. It's been a pleasure. I'll come back on anytime.
Okay.